Well, good morning. Before we jump in today, I want to make a special mention that tonight, right in here at 5 o'clock, our students, 6th through 12th grade, are gathering for Transit Night. And Transit Night's a time for them to come and build relationships, worship Jesus, hear a relevant message for them. Tonight, we're talking about relationships. Charity and I will even be on a little panel tonight answering some questions that students submitted. And so it's a great time. If you are a teenager or you know a teenager or you see one on the street, just throw them in your van, especially if you drive a black unmarked van. It's a joke. Please don't do that. Pretty sure it's a felony. And so anyways, we'd love them to be here tonight. It's just going to be an incredible time for our teenagers, 5 o'clock, right here in this place. Well, we've been in this new series. We started last week, just a three-week series called Flip or Flop. And I want to kind of revisit the idea behind this series. And we're taking it out of Proverbs 14:10 with some of the subject matter we're talking about. And this is what it says. It says, each heart knows its own bitterness. That word's also translated troubles. So each heart knows its own troubles, and no one else can fully share its joys. And basically what it's saying is that no one experiences the difficulties, the struggles, the emotional battles, the spiritual battles, the physical battles, all the things that we walk through as humans, nobody understands what you're going through quite as much as you do, because it is you. And we even talked about last week this idea that, you know, what we feel feels real to us. And so even if, there are times we go through things and we're like, I know it doesn't make sense that I feel this way, but I can't help feeling this way. So how we feel feels real to us. And the other idea, the other side of this scripture is also saying the same way that you experience the troubles you experience closest, that also the joys and the successes and the things that God walks you through and that he brings you through, you also experience in the same way like nobody else because it is you. And we're talking about three things in this series. Last week, we talked about the idea of anxiety. We talked about I am anxious. And I'd encourage you, if that's something that you deal with and that you've been struggling with, I'd encourage you to go online and find that message. I think it could really offer some hope for you. Today, we're talking about this idea of I feel stuck. I feel stuck. And then next week, we'll finish up talking about I feel anxious. I feel anxious. I'm sorry, I feel lonely. No, we're not going to revisit. Yeah, we're going to do part two. We're going to actually go back in time next week, so we'll go back to the future. Yeah, okay. So basically what we're talking about is this idea is that we want to gain the advantage on these things that we feel. We want to flip them to our benefit so we don't flop, because nobody likes to flop. And so we talked about these two kind of theme ideas. The first one, we talked about this idea that the struggle is real. You know, we say that. Do you ever feel that? The struggle is real. And we talked about, though, that we can't stay there. We can't stay at the idea of just recognizing the difficulty. If we just define the difficulty, that doesn't leave us with much hope. But the hope and the progress comes when we say, yes, the struggle is real, but so is the solution. My struggle is real, what I feel is real, and God understands that, and God has given me his word to help bring some solutions to what I'm going through. We talked about as well this idea that if you ever said, I can't even right now, I can't even talk to that person one more time. I can't even walk through the doors of work one more time. I can't even go through this right now. And that oftentimes when we say that, it's because there's this compounding effect. It's almost like the idea that when it rains, it pours. And so you're just like, oh my goodness, I'm trying to handle all these things. This other thing comes up and you say, I can't even. But we're saying that we can't just stay there, because the recognition that I can't isn't a bad thing. The Bible actually tells us that the more we realize that we can't, God can enable us to do whatever we need to do. So we say, I can't even, but you can. I can't even right now, God, but you can. And we talked about Philippians 4:13, that I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. And that's something that maybe if you've been around the church world for a while, you've heard a lot. But man, it's been such strength to me recently. I don't know, it's just come alive to me all over. And when I see a list of things that I got to do or hard conversations I have to have or whatnot, and I just feel like I can't even today, I remember, but God, I can do everything today. And sometimes I even look at the list. I'm like, I can do that and that and that and that and that. I can do all things today through Christ who gives me strength. And so I just want to encourage you with that today. The struggle is real. So is the solution. I can't even, but you can. Hold on to those things. And so today we're talking about I am stuck. You know, we experience this idea of feeling stuck in different ways, maybe even physically stuck somewhere, like literally wedged between two places. That'd be a really interesting story, and I'd be all up for hearing it sometime, so you can come find me later or send me an email. I was thinking about ideas of when I felt stuck, and I really tried to rack my brain and think of a time I physically felt wedged somewhere, and I don't think I could find one. It's probably happened, but I was kind of disappointed, so maybe I need to go get wedged between something this week. Yeah, I won't do that because you'd have to come help me. But I did think about this time probably in 2008 or so, maybe 2007. I think it was 2008. Charity and I went with a group of other people to Taiwan on a missions trip. And we were on the plane, and most of us got to sit beside our friends. And Charity got a seat between these very large Buddhist men. Like, little old Charity right there, two big Buddhist guys right on the other side of her. And I think it was in, like, the center section. So you couldn't, I mean, it was like, either way out was really difficult. And this is a really, really long flight. I think this flight alone was 13 hours. Yeah. And so I don't think she got up the entire flight. And because, like, one dude's falling asleep and all this stuff. It's so funny because she is stuck. She can't go anywhere. And so she said, well, you know, if I'm going to be stuck here, maybe I'll start talking to them about Jesus. And it was funny, too, because our plane hit some turbulence, and Charity doesn't deal well with that. And so, you know, she just, you know, and one of the guys said, don't worry, your God save you. So I guess she got through to him pretty good. the Buddhist guy reminding her of God's promises. Don't worry, your God save you. And so I was thinking for me, though, some of the times I feel stuck is, do you ever wait in the car when your wife goes in to a store? It's okay. I'm glad to do it. I'm just thinking now, though, with the invention of Uber. I'm just thinking one day I'm going to be like, honey, I called you an Uber. And, you know, kids and I, we just went home and we're resting. I'm just kidding. It's not that bad. But there's sometimes, you know, you're just kind of waiting. Maybe for you, it's traffic. You just feel stuck in traffic. I won't have you raise your hand, but some of you couldn't take it anymore. And you got in the emergency lane and you just went down, even though the exit was a mile away. Don't worry. I'm tempted in the same fashion. But yet I was without sin. I stayed the course. I want to so bad. But I can't. And so maybe you felt stuck in many different ways. Here's the basic idea of feeling stuck. We feel stuck when we want to be somewhere or be someone different than we currently are, than where we currently are or what we currently are, but we don't see any way of getting there. You feel stuck when you're in a place that you don't want to be, but you don't know when you can move, or maybe you don't know how to move. You don't know how to get out of the situation that you're in. And so then you've got to manage where you're at and how you feel. And day by day that's going by, I mean, being stuck in the car for a little while, you know, that passes. Being stuck on a plane, that passes. Being stuck between an object, hopefully for you, that passed, or you wouldn't be here. You know what I'm saying? And so those things pass, but it's difficult in life sometimes when we feel stuck in a place and we want to be somewhere different, but we don't know how. And we can feel stuck in a job. Some people feel stuck in a specific position in their job. Some people feel stuck in their home. They want to move. They want to do something different, go somewhere different, but I just don't know how. We feel stuck in relationships sometimes. I'm going to address that a little bit later. We feel stuck in family situations. There's drama going around, and it feels like it's just never going to end, and I'm just stuck in the middle of what's going on. We get stuck in ways of thinking. We feel like we get stuck in ways of behaving. We feel like we get stuck in these ongoing conflicts that just never seem to end. And there are just times that we feel stuck. And I'm sure you can identify what it might be for you. So you're somewhere different than you want to be, and you feel stuck. And I think just feeling this way is not a problem in and of itself. There are times in life we're going to feel stuck, and that is okay. It's the kind of the whole idea, the struggle is real, but again, we can't stay there. We all feel this way at times, but what we do when we feel stuck is what really matters. Because a time probably will come that you feel that way, but what you do when you feel that way really is what makes the difference. I know for me, one of the times that I felt stuck, and I've shared this story just bits and pieces of it a number of times, is really I was a youth pastor at a church several years back, just a few years into our marriage, and we felt like it was time to transition from where we were. And so we were living in Savannah, Georgia, and we moved back to Douglasville, and we really didn't know what was next. I mean, we felt like, man, we're still passionate about what we're doing. We still want to reach students, but there wasn't an opportunity right away. And I needed a job to feed my family and take care of my family. So I got a job at a metal factory. That was just a very difficult season of life for me because I felt like I had these dreams, these aspirations, these giftings, these things that were inside of me and that I had been exercising and living in. And now I'm standing in one spot for 10 hours a day putting barcodes on pieces of metal. And yet I know, God, this isn't the end goal for me, but in this season, this is where I am, and I'm really not sure how long it's going to last. And so I'm just waiting for what God's going to do. And it's easy, and I felt stuck a bit in that season, except I started analyzing this, and listen, I'm not the holiest person on the face of the earth, okay? I've got my difficulties. Just have a conversation with my wife. I don't know why I'm whispering because I'm on a microphone, so it doesn't really matter. But I feel like in that season, I carried the principles that I'm going to share today. And really, I didn't feel totally stuck. I mean, I grappled with frustration of like, how long is this going to last? When is the opportunity going to come? Is it the right opportunity? But within that season, I really leaned into what God was doing in that season in me. And I tried to live every day with my heart turned towards him, working as hard as I could, and just getting everything that God had for me in that time, realizing that he was going to bring me through to whatever was next. And I kind of just surrendered what that looked like to him. And so I found that it was a very difficult time, but at the same time, I felt like I flipped that season in my life. And I wouldn't take anything back from it. And I learned so many valuable things in that stuck season in my life. And so I hope to help some of you today as well that might feel stuck. Because here's what feeling stuck can produce. It can produce anxiety in you. It can produce fear in you. It can produce anger in you. It can produce bitterness in you toward people, toward situations, toward God. And then all of a sudden, what God's trying to do in that season, we miss. And we start living miserably. And I wanna hopefully help offer some things so you don't feel that way. Because feeling stuck can feel like quicksand. It's this idea of we're stuck and we want to push, we want to control, we want to manipulate, we want to leave, we want to force something to change. And a lot of times when we do that, all we're doing in all of our struggling and trying to make it happen is just burying ourselves deeper and deeper and making the problem more difficult. And so today I want to talk for a moment about David, King David in the Bible, the giant slayer. And I want to run through his story real quick. So basically, David is a young boy tending the sheep of his father. He's a shepherd. And those were formative times in his life. He would write about them in the Psalms, and he would share about them when he learned to worship God, when he learned to work hard, and he even fought animals at that time that he later, when he faced the giant Goliath, he said, listen, I had to fend off the bear and the lion against the sheep, so I can take you down too. And so God was doing things in him, and one day, this prophet named Samuel, the guy who's basically the mouthpiece of God to the nation, the advisor to the current king, Saul, and Saul had done some things, really turned his back on God, and God said, listen, I'm giving the anointing of king to somebody else. So Saul was still the king over the nation, but God had lifted that calling off of his life and said, you're still there, but I'm giving it to somebody else, somebody who's going to pursue me. And so basically Samuel shows up by God's leading to Jesse's house and says, hey, bring your sons here. And Jesse lines all his sons up. And Samuel goes, no. Do you have anybody else here? And he's like, well, there is David. I mean, he's in the field. I find it so funny that he's like, hey, call your sons together. And they didn't even think to call David. He's like, yeah, here are my boys. And then Samuel's like, it's not any of them. Are you sure you don't have any other children? And he's like, well, yeah, in the closet, I keep David. He's in the cupboard. And so David comes and Samuel says, you. And he pours oil on his head, which is representative of God's calling of the Holy Spirit. And he anoints him there as a young boy. They believe he was 15 years old as king of Israel. And then he goes back into the field. And so some time passes and Saul begins to get like tormented in his mind. He's going through a really crazy time. And so he knows that David plays an instrument. And so David begins to come to Saul and play the lyre, L-Y-R-E. It's like a little mini harp thing. So he could slay giants and play instruments. I don't know that I could do either. So I guess I need to up my game and find my man card. So basically he begins to play for Saul to soothe Saul. So he was basically like the deep focus Spotify playlist for Saul. And it soothes Saul, and then some time passes, and David ends up killing Goliath, and that's really what puts him on the charts. Because then people start singing, David kills his tens of thousands, and Saul kills his thousands. And this makes Saul jealous. And so as David continues to attend to Saul, Saul tries to kill David on a couple different occasions. Like he throws a spear at him, he pursues him, and it causes David to have to flee. And so in my mind, I'm just thinking about David, who was kind of on this upward progression. You know, he's like out in the pasture, just being faithful. Samuel comes and finds him. You're going to be king of Israel. Okay, cool. And then he kind of gets his foot in the door with Saul, and then he kills a giant. And it's like, man, God's really bringing to fruition everything that I had hoped as I was just giving my life over to him. And then all of a sudden, he ends up fleeing in the direction opposite of where he thought he was supposed to be going. You ever felt that way in life? Like I'm serving God, I'm being faithful, and for some reason I feel like I'm moving in the exact opposite. Like, wait, no, God, we're supposed to be going that way. And you're like on an escalator that you don't have the ability to turn around on. And sometimes we feel like that in life. And that's kind of where David found himself. And David flees to this cave. He's the OG Bruce Wayne. And he's in the Bat Cave called Adullam. I hit the DC fans. The Marvel fans are like, make a Marvel reference. The movies are better, the Marvel movies, than DC. Okay. I didn't get paid for that advertisement. But if you're listening and you'd like to pay me, I might. Okay. So David finds himself in this cave called Adullam. And it's funny because it actually says in 1 Samuel 22, too, it says, all those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him. I just think it's funny to me. It's like David runs and all these guys are like, hey, let's go with him. Nobody likes him either. And so they go and they gather with him. And it says he became their commander. It says there were about 400 men in all. And so these people start gathering to David, these misfits. But what I love is really, if you fast forward through David's story, these are the men that he showed how to honor God, how to worship, how to follow the Lord. And then there were just times that, and we won't get into this, there were times, there was one time that Saul was in a cave and his men came up from the other side of the cave and David snuck up on Saul while he was using the bathroom and cut a piece of his cloak off. And then when Saul left the cave, David walked out because he was pursuing him. He was trying to kill him. And he walked out and he held it up and he said, he was so humble. He was like, I'm so sorry I did this. But he's trying to show him, I could have killed you, but I spared you. Stop chasing me. And I love that though, because the men were like, here's your chance, kill him. And he said, that's not God's calling on me. So you're thinking of these men, these men that are hardened and have probably all kinds of issues. He was showing them what it meant to follow God. And eventually when he would become king, these are the men that he trusted the most and that would serve in his army. And David had a group of guys he even called his mighty men, and the mighty men of valor. And they would like do all these crazy exploits. One of them, it says he killed a lion in a pit on a snowy day. It's just crazy stuff. And those were these men that gravitated toward David during this time in his life. And so he finds himself at this cave, this place that he feels stuck. And much like us, it's what David does in this season, what he chooses from here, that will really determine who he becomes and what he does. If he becomes the person that God desires him to be and he moves in the places God desires him to move, or if he flops, he flipped the season, or he could have flopped and he could have done what he thought was best and he would not have ended up where God desired him to be. So David seemed to be stuck. He seemed to be stuck in this cave because of another person's issues, another person's failure. And I don't know, some people might find yourself stuck. I can't analyze every situation. You might find yourself stuck and you feel like somebody else's decisions ended up putting me here. Somebody says something at work that's not totally true, and yet you're kind of looked at differently, maybe because of your position or however they saw it, and all of a sudden you end up in a position that you don't feel like was really your doing to get there. Sometimes we feel stuck, we feel in a cave because we did make the decision. We were disobedient. We did the wrong thing. And so now I am in this season as a ramification of my actions. And then sometimes we feel stuck in a season. It was kind of me, like I felt like I was just being faithful to God and it was time to move somewhere and now I'm stuck in this season and I don't feel like it was my failures or anyone else's fault. It was just a season that God had me in as I was following him. Yeah. Whatever the reason, the thing is, we just have to embrace the season. Whatever reason you find yourself feeling stuck, the only thing that's going to help you is if you embrace the season. And it's this idea that the kind of we talked about last week is this idea that sometimes with anxiety, we get so stuck in the past and it's the idea that, there's nowhere to go but forward. That's why I have notes, people. Thank you. It's you have to come to this realization sometimes that there's nowhere to go for me today but forward. I could choose to sit here, stay here, and that's not going to do anything for me. But today, wherever I find myself, whether I made the bad decision or not, I have to embrace today and move forward. And sometimes that's a difficult thing to do, but it's where we have to start. So even if you caused the reason, if you are the cause for feeling stuck, if you stay in that place, I'm so terrible, I can't believe what I did. Yes, recognize what you did. Own up to it. Apologize to who you need to apologize to. But if you stay stuck there, that's no good either. And God wants to take you forward. So embrace the season that you're in. And here's what David wrote from the cave in Psalm 142. And then I'm going to give you four quick things. Psalm 142, David said this. It says, a psalm of David regarding his experience in the cave, a prayer. It says, I cry out to the Lord. I plead for the Lord's mercy. I pour out my complaints before him and tell him all my troubles. And this is kind of where we talked about last week, this idea of casting our cares on him because he cares for us. And that a lot of times we're good at casting our cares all these different places. But the first place we have to come is that we cast our cares on him. We cast our complaints on him. Your complaints don't offend him. Your struggles don't offend him. And so we cast our complaints, and David's in this cave. He's stuck. I cast my complaints on you. I cast my troubles on you. And it says, when I'm overwhelmed, but here's the recognition. When I'm overwhelmed, you alone know the way I should turn. So I'm coming to you. I'm casting my cares on you. Why am I here, God? What's going on? Because you alone know the way that I'm supposed to go. He continues, wherever I go, my enemies have set traps for me. I look for someone to come and help me, but no one gives me a passing thought. No one will help me. No one cares a bit what happens to me. Okay, David, you're getting a little dramatic. But even if you feel this is true, the good news is that you can always cast your cares on Jesus. He always cares for you. So even if you're in that place, you're like, no one notices, no one cares, cast your cares on him. Then it says, then I pray to you, O Lord, I say you are my place of refuge. This is where David always gets to. He acknowledges the difficulties, but he always comes back to this place. I pray to you, God. I say you are my place of refuge. You are all I really want in life. Hear my cry, for I'm very low. Rescue me from my persecutors, for they are too strong for me. Bring me out of prison so I can thank you. The godly will crowd around me, for you are good to me. For you are good to me. And that's kind of where I want to launch off into giving you a plan today. I want to give you a plan for when you feel stuck. And I love that David ends there, for you are good to me. And the first place I want to go in this plan is I want to talk about purpose. I want to talk about purpose. What is God's ultimate purpose for you? I think we have to define that. What is God's ultimate purpose for me? Why am I living and breathing? And here's what it says. So outside of what you do, outside of where you live, outside of who you marry, outside of what job you do, where you work, God's ultimate purpose is to be good to you. God's ultimate purpose is to be good to you. That translates as well. It says you're good to me. It also says you deal bountifully with me. It's that idea of fullness. This is how you deal with me. Now, before you start thinking that I'm preaching heresy, that God's ultimate purpose is to be good to you, to do good to you, it's kind of the difference between a child defining what it means for a parent to be good to them and a parent defining what it means for a parent to be good to them. Because for a child to define what a parent being good to them means you end up with kids like on Willy Wonka. I watched that movie like 20 times when we were on vacation. Actually, I think I heard it like 17 times and watched it 3 times because in the car and in the background and stuff, it was just constantly Willy Wonka. But it's a great movie, so I would keep listening and watching. But it's this idea that they get everything they want and it's my way, so serve me, do what I want, and they end up rotten. That is not what it means for God to be good to you. For God to be good to you is more from a parent's perspective. That I'm going to say no to you. That I'm going to encourage you and I'm going to love you. And I'm going to show you how much I care about you. And then I'm going to invest everything that I am into you because I created you. But I'm going to discipline you. Because you can't do that. You can't act like that. I need to show you the error of what you're doing and where that's going to lead you. Let me take some time to talk with you and explain to you. And I'm going to say, when there's things that you want and I know it's best for you not to have it, I'm going to say no, not now. And that's more of God's perspective of the idea that God's ultimate purpose is to be good to you. Is that God's ultimate purpose is to make you more and more like Jesus. And that's the greatest thing he could ever do for you. And he knows the best way to accomplish that. Right. He knows what to allow into your life and what to hold back from your life. He knows when to allow the difficulty to come in, and he knows how to give you strength within it, and he knows when to say, no, enough is enough. Yeah. And the hard part is that sometimes we feel like enough is enough. And God's saying, no, I'll keep holding you. I'll keep giving you strength. Trust me. My ultimate purpose, my big purpose for you outside of all these other things, the reason you're here is for me to make you like Jesus. and trust me in that. So in the midst of the seasons that seem confusing, in the midst of the seasons you feel stuck, in the midst of the seasons where it feels like nothing is working in your favor, you have to remember that if you love God, he works all things according to your good. You have to remember that he is good to you. You have to remember that, what does he say? My plans are to prosper you. But he's got to define what it means to prosper us, because we've twisted that all kinds of directions. And so he defines what it means to prosper me, to make me like Jesus, to fill me with joy in a difficult situation. But I have plans to prosper you, not to harm you, to give you hope and a future, is what he tells us in Jeremiah. He didn't friend you to block you. God didn't save you to leave you. He didn't call you to hang up on you. Here's what we have to remember. When you're having trouble understanding his plan, you have to remind yourself of his purpose. Yes, yes. Because his plan won't always make sense to you. But in the midst of that plan, in the midst of the stuck season, you have to remember his global purpose is to do good to you. So when you feel like, why do you hate me right now? Why are you doing this? Why can't you do this? You got to step back like David and Cyrus. I see the troubles, but God, you know the way that I should go. And you'll hold me in this time. And so when you can't understand his plan, you have to remind yourself of his purpose. So the second one, the second thing in the plan, the L, is longing. Longing. You know, it's really our longings. Our longings are these desires in us, these yearning desires of where we want to be. It's the longings in us that really create the tension in these seasons where we feel stuck. I heard somebody talk about this idea of the expectation gap several years ago. So the expectation gap is where we are. So there's a gap from where we are to where we want to be. And in the middle is where frustration happens. And in the middle, what defines this is our longing. Because I am here, but I long to be here, and now I'm frustrated because I don't know how to get there. And that's really where those feelings come from. And we could take time to really define all these longings, but I really felt more led to just give a word of caution. Because we have to make sure that what we're longing for lines up with God's plan for us. Because sometimes we feel stuck and we're creating this frustration, and God's saying, but that's not even the thing I want you aiming at. That's not even where I'm trying to take you. And so you're frustrated in this season for something that I'm saying that's not the best thing for you. You know, I once knew somebody that felt stuck in their marriage. And so they had this expectation gap. This is where I am. Here's the reality of where I am. Things are difficult right now. We're not getting along. We can't see eye to eye. I feel trapped. Where I want to be is I want to be in a healthy relationship. I want to be somewhere that's full of joy and where I'm giving and they're giving. And yeah, there's difficulty, but we're working as a team. And so the way that they perceived that was to exit the relationship versus letting, this is where I am, this is where I want to be, and to get there is this idea of restoration and working together. And so their longing turned into their disobedience and just turned into an exit plan. Wow. In something that was not abusive and that could have found restoration, but they didn't even pursue it. They just took the exit. And so what they were looking at, they had all mixed up. Because yeah, you should be in a healthy marriage, get healthy. But that's not the way to accomplish it. So what you're longing for isn't even what I'm really saying is best for you. And so we have to be careful, and I think that it would be unwise of us to not examine ourselves, because the Bible tells us that our heart is deceitful above all things. But it says that God searches our hearts and he tests our minds. And I think we're just fooling ourselves as in these seasons to examine and make sure what it is that's causing this stuck feeling is from God. And the only way you can do that, Psalm 139 tells us, it says, search me, God. This is somebody who is asking, who's writing and saying this and actively living this. He says, search me, God. Know my heart. Test me. Know my anxious thoughts. See if there's an offensive way in me. And then lead me in your way. And so we have to ask God, search me, know me, test me, and then lead me. And we have to allow him to speak into that. And if you're not sure, find somebody that you trust. Find somebody that loves Jesus and believes in the Bible and isn't going to just tell you what you want to hear, but somebody that can listen and give you an honest evaluation of where you're at. So the next one, the A, is attitude. Attitude. Our attitude, the way that we perceive things and the way that we position ourselves makes all the difference in the seasons that we feel stuck. See, God doesn't waste a single season of our lives, but we can. God won't waste anything, but we can, and it depends upon the way that we approach it. The way that we wake up every day and the thoughts that circulate in our mind and the things that we rehearse and the things that we tell ourselves and the things that we allow to speak to us, that makes a difference. And that sets our attitude. And I really just want us to remember this. The only time you're truly stuck is when you stop growing. The only time you are truly ever stuck in life is when you stop growing. When I was working in that factory, if I had just checked out and not leaned into the process and not allowed God to work in my heart and speak to me every day and get up and bring my frustrations and the times I didn't want to go to work, and yet to say, God, I'm going to be faithful with every day. I'm going to walk in there and I'm going to be so kind to my managers and I'm going to speak well of people and I'm going to look for opportunities to lift somebody today and I'm going to work with excellence as if I'm working directly for you. I had to shift my attitude that it's not where I wanted to be, but it's where I was. And that kind of leads into the final thought, the end, which is now. Now. Here's the deal. You have to be present. You're going to wake up in the day, and the season you're in is kind of like where we started, embracing the season. You have to say, here's where I am now. God, for whatever reason, here's where I am now. And so today, here and now, I'm turning my heart towards you. I'm asking you to speak to me. I don't understand it all, but lead me today. And we have to show up and we have to be present. And when it feels hard and you don't want to, you got to remind yourself again, because it's going to end this stuck season. It's going to be the cycle. Do you think that David didn't wake up many days in that cave wondering, why in the world am I still here? God, I'm here, and I'm going to do everything you've called me to do today, and I'm going to honor you, and I'm going to live for you, and I'm going to allow you to change me and transform me. Because the reality is, if he doesn't let us go through these cave seasons, there are things that we would never learn, areas we'd never grow in. God takes us on these journeys and caves and valleys and mountains. We wish it was all in the mountain. You ever go on vacation and wish you could stay at the beach or stay in the mountains? But at some point, you got to come home. And you got to engage in life. And we got to do that every day, no matter where we find ourselves, trusting that God's working. Because here's the truth. If you get so caught up in where you're not, you will not be faithful with where you are, and you will never get where you want to be. If you're so caught up in where you're not, you will not be faithful with where you are, and you will never get where you want to be. So we have to embrace the process today and let God do what he wants to do. And so maybe if you feel stuck in here today, remember, first and foremost, you are not drifting out all by yourself. He has a purpose for you, a purpose to make you more like Jesus. And whatever's crossed your path today, his purpose is to do good to you, to lead you, and to make you like Jesus, to weed the things out of you that don't need to be there, to put the things into you that need to be there. We need to remember to examine our longings and what we're even trying to pursue to make sure it really lines up with what he's wanting to do. We need to ask God to give us the mind of Christ and change our attitudes and lift our thinking out of where we are. And then we got to show up today, now, and let God work in us now so that we can get to where he wants us to be then. And I'm telling you, if you'll be faithful with now, he'll get you where you need to be. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding, but in all of your ways, acknowledge him, and he will guide your path. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. So if you bow your head and close your eyes with me in here today, Jesus, I'm just praying right now for those that feel stuck. I'm praying first and foremost that you've given them hope. Hope that you can get them through wherever they are, that you can do, they can do everything through you who gives them strength. So I'm just praying if there's anyone in here that's been relying on their own strength, trying to make their own plan, that you'd remind them today that you can't. You can't even, but I can in you. God, I'm praying that when we walk out of this place today and we step into the season that we feel stuck, you'd remind us of these things. And maybe you're here today and you haven't taken a step to follow Jesus. You haven't taken that first step to just give it all to him and walk in his ways. Here's the truth. Jesus lived the life that you should have lived. He died the death that you should have died in your place. And on the third day, he rose from the dead. And now he offers the free gift of salvation to everyone who would believe in him. And your first step today is living in the purpose he created you for, and that's being a son and a daughter of God. And all you have to do today is say, Jesus, I believe in you. Jesus, forgive me of my sin. It's not about the good or the bad that you did. We all were born with sin, and we all just have to trust in Jesus, and he makes us new. He'll begin to do a new work in your heart. He'll begin to lead you in new ways. All you got to do today is say, Jesus, I want to follow you. Maybe you're in here today and you made a decision to follow Jesus a long time ago, but you feel so distant, so far from him. For you today, it's saying, I'm making a new commitment. I'm recommitting myself today to following Jesus, to waking up each day and saying, lead me. I don't want to lead me today. I want you to lead me. So God, do a transforming work in our hearts. And lead us in your ways. Make us more like Jesus. Help us to honor you. And we'll trust you with everything else. In Jesus' name, amen.